Good evening. Welcome to the Monday Night Fan Zone. My name's Phil. This is Leicester Fan TV. We want to get your views in, your comments. As ever, we can get them on screen. I am joined tonight by our very own Jamie, live from the Fox's Arms. Well, a lockdown Fox's Arms in Alcudia. And also Julian Watts, who many of you may remember playing for Leicester City, albeit for not a fairly short time, but a fairly exciting time, which culminated in the 1996 playoff final, which I'm sure many of you will want to talk about. But get your views and get your comments in, and welcome to tonight's Fan Zone show. Yes, indeed. Like I say, tonight we are joined by Jamie from the Fox's Arms. She'll be logging in very shortly. But we're also joined by Julian Watts, who did play for Leicester City, a centre-back, back in the mid-90s and played in that 1996 playoff final, which many of you will remember as being one of the finest. It's probably in most people's top 10 ever Leicester games. It could be even some people's number one ever game. It was the game that Spider Callock came on and famously Stevie Claridge shinned in. So we can ask Julian about that match and, of course, anything to do with that season and his time at Leicester City. So as ever, if you want to get your comments in, I can put them on screen. Good evening to Matty Bond, Mick Paget. Good evening to you. What would you guys like to ask Julian Watts? Get your comments coming in here. Well done. Somebody on our Facebook group is saying up the NHS, say stay safe, people. Up the Foxes. Absolutely. Alex Green, how are you, Alex? Good to be seeing you tonight on this. And Maz, good evening. And Mick Paget says, good evening, Jamie Preston. Well, let's bring Jamie in. Here he is. Jamie, how are you?
Stardom at last. I'm well known by everyone now.
I know. Here is a Foxes legend in a very different way, all the way from the Foxes Arms in Alcudia. How is it?
Well, it's good. It's quiet. It's boring. Watching too much TV, eating too much food. We're getting there, though, slowly. The thing is, though, like I say, like everyone's been saying, everyone's doing it over here. Stay safe. Stay indoors. That's it. It's the way to do it. The way forward.
If we all do it together, we'll get through it a lot quicker. Good evening, Sean. Sean Sarson says good evening. So good evening to you. And so does Pat York, Chris Ward. Everybody saying hello, Jamie.
That's what I like to hear.
Simon May saying hope all is well. Now listen, Jamie, we're going to bring Julian in a second. You've organised this, so tell us a little bit more. Your memories briefly before we bring Julian in of Julian as a player around that. We are going to talk about the 96 playoff final.
Well, we signed him from Chef Wednesday, and he came in centre half to play with Stevie Walsh, because I think Walsh was getting a little bit, he was not old, but he was getting a bit there, and we needed some cover for him. And he came and he played quite well. Towards the middle of his time there, I think he was a bit injury, not injury prone, he got an injury and he couldn't quite get back in the side. I think we never saw the best of him, unfortunately. But I think we'll find out some decent stories from him tonight about the playoffs and his time at Leicester, to be honest. I think it'll be nice listening to him.
Brilliant. So we want people to get their questions in to Julian as he comes in very, very shortly. Martin saying good evening from Staffordshire. Hope you're well. Chris Ward is saying good evening. And Jordan, good evening to you as well. Jordan is saying get the news in. Oh, LCFC Holland is watching on Periscope. We are streaming as ever on Facebook, YouTube, Periscope,
Dutch Fox.
And Twitter.
Hello, Dutch Fox.
He's there. Now, let's less talking. I don't know what you're on about, Jordan, there. Let's bring in Julian. How are you, Julian?
Yeah, good, thanks. Very good.
Thank you. First of all, thanks so much for coming on tonight's show with us and giving us hopefully a bit of insight as to being an ex-professional footballer and what it was like at Leicester City.
Yeah, no worries. Just like Jamie said, it's quite boring at the minute, so I'm happy to be on anything.
Well, that sounds good. Yeah,
backhanded compliment. You want him tonight?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, he's straight in there with a well. I'm pretty I'm so bored. I'd even come on Leicester Fan TV with you guys. No, brilliant. Listen, I am going to try, before we get chatting, I'm going to try and briefly put on screen some. I know I keep talking about the 96 playoff final. I'm just going to, not everybody who watches this, Julian, can remember it. So I'm just going to briefly put it on screen for people to watch just 2 minutes of it. Is that okay?
Sound, yeah.
So here we go. Let's see if we can get this in. God knows if Facebook will shut us down for this.
Spider, the man.
Six and a half seconds left to the game. As Elko went onto the field, putting his gloves on, said, "Don't worry, I'll win it for you." And, you know, to this day, that some of the Crystal Palace players say that they were actually disturbed by the substitution taking place and lost a little bit of concentration.
That could be the winner from Claridge. It is! Stevie Claridge! In the most unexpected way, has paid off, and the man he signed for £1 million has scored a goal that's worth a lot more than that. Stevie Claridge hits the back of the net, and that means that Leicester are back in the Premiership.
Oh, it's just a perfect end. I thought that. Early doors thought, oh, it'd be nice to get a goal. They just forgot about it. The ball just set up and I've shinned it in, so. Oh, it's brilliant.
Shinned it in?
Oh, I think so, yeah. I don't know what it. I can't feel my legs are just cramping and everything, but. Oh, it's just a great feeling. I can't believe it. Best feeling in the world.
And Captain Fantastic, as they call him at Filbert Street, leads his players to receive the trophy. But more importantly than that, to receive a place back amongst the big boys. Mike Brewer Alcock, the managing director of Ensley Insurance, hands over the trophy, and listen to this noise.
So, Julian, you were on the pitch during all that. Some of us were stood in Wembley. Tell us, let's start with that. I'm going to get you, what was it like to be on the pitch during that, Julian?
Unbelievable for myself. I'd sort of had a background at Rotherham United and Sheffield Wednesday, not really forged a proper first team place with either, to be honest. So Leicester was a great opportunity for me, and we got to the final that day. And I just remember being so nervous. It was driving up Wembley Way, and I think Steve Walsh was cracking jokes about being tense, and I'm thinking I really am. And it was so nerve wracking on the bus driving through the doors at Wembley. But then I think, as most players that are nervous before games, once you get out onto the pitch, that just kicks in as adrenaline and it carries you through the game. And it certainly needed to, because it was, we're playing the extra time and the pitch was quite sapping, you know, towards the end. I think both teams were really out on the feet. So to get it over the line that late on was great for us.
What did you think when he brought Spider Kallak on? What's going through your players' mind? Because as fans, from a fan's point of view, Jamie, you were at Wembley that day or not?
I was level with the penalty box when Claridge scored.
I
couldn't believe
it. From a fan's point of view, we're sat in the stands going, what on earth are we doing? But on the pitch?
I think at the time I remember feeling a bit sorry for Kev Poole, because he was a great lad and a fantastic keeper. And in particular in that game, he had a great game, and he pulled one out of the top corner from Undara in the second half, which kept us in the game. It was a crucial point. But in training, Spider was fantastic at saving penalties just because of his frame. He had that confidence. He was a larger-than-life character. Forgive the punks, he was 6'7", but he really was good when we did the old penalties in training. So you could see why he'd done it, but it just felt really harsh. The game, you know, for us, that was it. The game was actually going to be over in a few minutes. And, you know, you're just thinking about the penalties. And I think in my head, I was probably thinking, hopefully I wasn't going to take one.
Would you? Yeah. Did you take
11?
If I'd have been asked, I would have said yes, but I would have probably hoped not to be asked. I would hope there'd be five more before me and a lot better than me. But fortunately, it didn't get to that. And I think you can see from the goal that the Palace players don't seem to be set up properly. And I think they're looking and wondering what's going off, and there's no one actually close to Claridge. Claridge probably isn't really in the right position. He sort of moves onto the ball. Everyone just seemed a little bit all over the place, and it did seem to disturb him, as Martin alluded to in his interview. So, and glad that it is, because, you know, for me, that's the best moments in my career when that ball goes in the back of the net.
Again, many fans watching this will remember, and whether it's a myth, but I seem to remember it, is that when Claridge hit that ball and it hit the net, nobody celebrated what felt like a second or so. There was a real gap when everybody just stopped.
It is, and I think when he hit it, and I will say now, he's been gutted to this day that he said he shinned it, because he's adamant now.
It's a great goal.
But he said it at the time, and it stuck, and everyone will forever remember it for that. But the way he hits it, he didn't really hit it sort of clean or strike it well, and it seemed to go through the air really slowly. Totally wrong foot of the keeper. And for that reason, it looked like a super slow-mo of something, you know, and it's quite ridiculous looking back. But Nigel Martin, completely wrong-footed, rooted to the spot, and we all just slowly watched it. And I think it was just that time lapse that made it seem like we weren't reacting. But, you know, it was like a bit of disbelief, and it's gone in, and then we all went absolutely crackers, obviously.
David Hart has put a comment here. He says he was heading out of the stadium when Spider came on. What were you doing leaving the stadium at that point, David? Come on.
He forgot there was penalties.
Yeah. Chapper says old school footy here. Love it.
What does he know about old school Chappers? He's not old enough.
Stuart says...
Us three are, but he ain't.
Stuart Widow says the goal went in slow motion, which is sort of how it felt, isn't it, guys?
Absolutely.
I remember being there, like I said, you just stopped, and literally the whole world seemed to stop and nothing else happened. And then even when it hit the net, I still didn't believe it had gone in to start off with. It was so slow. I mean, it was probably the best, worst strike he's ever done, old Stevie Claridge.
I don't remember, Julian, I don't remember too much else about the game. Obviously, I was there. I remember it being quite a good game, but a very tense game. And I do remember Kevin Poole, like you say, making a few very important saves.
He did. I think we came out of the blocks quite quickly, but they seemed to get a grip on the game from about the 10th minute onwards, and they had quite a good spell in which they scored. And it was unbelievable. I mean, the strike, I think, went through my legs. I was stretching to block it. And unbelievably, which I'll probably never see again, there was like a bobble, and it bobbled over Pooley's hand on the Wembley turf. So... you know, it was tough for us to take it in a game like that. And you know how tight the margins are. We beat them away 1-0. I think it was my third game just after I joined. And that was a really, really tight game. They were the favourites to win the playoffs right from the very beginning. They were probably deemed the strongest team in there. And we really came in late. And, you know, it was always going to be tight. So going a goal down was really disappointing. But I think, the way we managed the game after that, particularly, I'll say there are moments, and Pooley has starred in a couple of those moments. But I think what you saw in the rest of that game, and what you saw when we got promoted to the Premier League, was the fight that the team had, and the togetherness that the team had, which was, you know, you might have seen it from the stands, but when you're in amongst it, I've never really felt a team work so hard for each other and be so together. And stupidly enough, or funnily enough, that goes back to us socialising a lot together, which you probably couldn't get away with now. But, you know, we were a tight-knit group that went out and had probably a few too many in the middle of the week or after games. But it sort of pulled us together as
on
a team.
On the Wednesday club, was that?
Yeah, that was in Brannigan's on the Wednesday club. Yeah, driving, coming back from the midweek games leading up to the playoffs. We always been to Brannigan's in town because we knew the two lads who owned it, and we'd stay in there, you know, for quite some time. But it was a funny thing. It was one of the things that the gaffer believed in as well. So I know when we got promoted and we'd get a couple of good results in the Premier League, it would often give us quite a few days off in succession, and we would literally just be out for two or three days. But again, maybe fitness-wise, whether you could do that now, I don't know. But as a team bonding, it was an unbelievable exercise. And it certainly worked for that team that got promoted and then continued to do well the next year.
Julian, go on, Jamie. No, you jump in.
I was just going to say, when we got that penalty through when Mudgee got tripped over and you got Gary Parker coming up to take the penalty, I bet you thought, well, this is 1-1 straight away, because he must have been the most reliable man from the spot I have ever seen.
Yeah, he was. I mean, he's super cool. He'd been there and done it before he came to Leicester. Fantastic footballer. I mean, just before I arrived, I think, was the moments he'd had a few ups and downs with the gaffer. I think there was rumours of a teacup being thrown or a teapot, whichever it was. So that was a bit all up in the air when I arrived. But he came back into the team, and he was. I mean, we really liked to play football as well, which, you know, wasn't so popular then as it is now, and even on the difficult pitch that we had. And he was the kingpin of all that, to be honest. And absolutely, Jamie, as you said, when he stepped up, I mean, the keeper sort of nearly got to it, but cracking penalty, and, you know, the best man on the pitch for us to go and do that.
And also, talking of your arrival, I'm not sure whether you know this stat, Julian. You know, today is exactly 24 years ago you made your debut for Leicester.
Funnily enough, I saw that on, it was on, someone had posted it on Instagram today, and unfortunately it was
what the game was.
I know, I mean, like, you know, I'd come from Sheffield Wednesday, it was against Sheffield United, I got slaughtered by the United fans. I didn't play very well, I've got to be honest, and I got slaughtered by a few of the Leicester fans as well. So,
and then it was the day Martin O'Neill will never forget.
Yeah, yeah. And that was sort of typical character of the gaffer. He went out into the car park, fronted them up, and said, you know, bring two or three of you in to represent the voice of the rest of you, and we'll sit down and talk it out. And they put three people together, came in, the gaffer took them in his office, sat them down, asked them what he thought, you know, how things were going, what the gripes were, what the positives were. They had a conversation. I believe they all left reasonably happy. The gaffer was a really clever guy and a good speaker. And that was that. And then fortunately, on the back of that came, apart from the blip with West Brom, which was unusual because I think we were the better team, to be fair. But we went away, beat Charlton 1-0. We went away, beat Palace 1-0. We were both playoff rivals. And it started a fantastic run. And the team really started to come together then. Because I know Muzzy only came on as sub against United, but he started the game against Charlton. And what a difference he was. And none of us at the time, you know, I certainly didn't know what kind of a player he was. I just know that he signed on the same day as me. I didn't see him at the ground. But I mean, what a cracking player, you know, what a Leicester legend he turned out to be.
The game you're
when he signed, it was Muzzy Who. No one had ever heard of him.
Absolutely, it was. I'd never heard of him. And, you know, but I mean, one thing I will say about Martin and John Robertson, they brought in players who fitted with the ethos of the team and the squad and how they wanted to play. And if you look through all the players they signed, I know in my time when I particularly looked, I don't remember there being many who weren't successful and became integral parts of the team. There's a couple, you know, you can look back at one or two and not being, you know, discourteous to people, but Graham Fenton never really settled down like you would have thought, because I thought he was a cracking player and he was a lovely kid, but he didn't really settle down and make his mark on the team. But you look at your Ian Marshalls and players like that, Muzzy Izzet come from nowhere. For me, one of the things they did well was the scouting of players.
The game, just to allude, again, some fans are too young to remember, Julian, but the game you're referring to there, Jamie, is the Sheffield United. It's quite a notorious, famous sit-in after the game where Leicester fans, I mean, many fans won't think, what? We did that with Martin O'Neill. But if they weren't there at the time, they wouldn't remember or wouldn't have known that we hit a low under Martin O'Neill, and fans, I remember them sitting in the cop, standing there. Go on, Jamie.
I think we went about 8 games without a win, or we had a couple of draws or something. I can't remember the exact one, but we went from his first game after, I think we drew with Grimsby on his first game. And I think then we didn't win again until it was either Charlton or Palace. I can't remember which way it was, but we won 2-1-0 away, like Julian just said.
Yeah, it was Charlton was the Sheffield United game, I think it was a Saturday. Charlton away was Tuesday, and then it was Palace away Saturday. And to come back on those two results, it just lifted everyone. Lifted us, must have lifted the club. I mean, obviously, would have lifted the supporters as well. I mean, you always know that, in all fairness, I always think away supporters are the real, you know, diehards who just get behind you come what may. Even if you're having a bad day, they get behind you. And for us to go away and get those two results, I think it was fantastic. And that it carried us on. Like I say, there was the hiccup against West Brom, but the run we went on was phenomenal after that.
Julian, I've got a question here from Kenny Giddings, who's watching. He says, how good was O'Neill as a manager?
I knew someone had asked me this. It's a funny one for myself, because he's a very good manager, very clever guy. And like I say, The recruitment, Kenny, that he did was fantastic, and he brought players in that fitted in well. And I think some managers might go out with a bit of money to spend and they can bring in a big name. Does he fit in? You know, you see players, you know, going to other teams and it doesn't work out for them because they don't fit in. They brought players that really came into the squad, had the right personalities. He did his homework on that respect. You know, they worked hard, which is what you had to do when we were at Leicester City in those days. And, you know, that was their strong point. For me personally, wasn't my favourite manager. He was very in and at your face, and I suffered a lot with that in the run up to the playoffs. I mean, the in joke with the lads was for me to go in for 5 minutes, get my rollick in, and then they'd come in and we'd do the rest of the team tour. And it's true. He never really deft enough off the pitch. I got on really, really well with him, football aside, but you know, I always got the feeling he didn't really rate me, he never really backed me, and you know, and I had some bad times with it, to be honest with you. So, but you look at people like, and if you had Robbie Savage on tonight, if you had Ian Marshall on tonight, they absolutely loved his style of management. He wrung the best out of them week in, week out, and that fear factor. I think I needed a bit more of a cuddle because I'm a bit more of a sensitive guy. Oh.
Well, that's fair enough. I've got another question for you. And this doesn't have to be a Leicester player necessarily. Jack says, Julian, who was the best player you ever played with?
It's a difficult one because you play with different players at different times. So obviously I played with Emil, who went on to play for England, and you know, while he was never, you know, a big goal scorer, he had that classic period at Liverpool where he scored. And I do know with Emil that everyone that you ask who their favourite striker to play with was, if anyone had played with Emil, they would say Emil because he was the battering ram that created so much for them. So I know your Michael Owens, your Robbie Fowles, they all used to love playing with him. But I was also lucky enough to play at Chef Wednesday when we had several England players. We had John Sheridan, you know, Republic of Ireland, Roland Nielsen, played for Sweden, Chris Waddle, David Hurst, who for me was the best striker in England.
But
take the injury away, and what an unbelievable, you know, player. And, you know, he was coming into his four just at the right time, and the injury really took a lot away from him. So, I mean, if you're looking at players with names who I played with, you know, for me, I'd probably say Chris Waddle. He really had a purple patch at Sheffield Wednesday to watch him on that right wing take the absolute mickey out of some of the best fullbacks in the Premier League. I mean, we just used to sit there chuckling, or, you know, what it was, he obviously had the left foot that people had sort of show him on his right, and he'd just go down on his right and put an equally as good baller in that. He was just a great player and a really good lad.
So I guess this is the reverse of that question. Mick Padgett says, Julian, who was the toughest opponent you played against?
Anyone who was small and quick, I think. I mean, I was lucky to play in an era where it was the influx of the foreign players. And I would think, as a pairing, I've always said, like, if people ask me this, it was Ian Wright, because he was a real lively, non-stop 90 minutes all over the place. He was chirping in your ear. But we had an afternoon before the League Cup final, and the gaffer rested a few players, and it was quite warm as well. And we were playing against Dennis Bergkamp and Ian Wright, and it's probably one of the most torrid afternoons of my life. So, but again, you know, I've played against Cantona, luckily enough, Viali, you know, your Gianfranco Zola, your good Johnson. So luckily to be in an era where there were all those players as the Premier League was sort of really just starting to take off and boom. But I would say that afternoon with Bergkamp, who, by the way, was a lot quicker than anyone gave him credit for, because he had the ability and the strength. He didn't realise he had quite a turn of pace over 10, 20 yards, which was a bit embarrassing at times. But yeah, that was the worst afternoon, I think, in football I've had against some good opponents.
Just looking at the team, I'm looking at the 96 playoff team, Julian, which you obviously were part of. You were number four shirt in that. Kevin, yeah. I'm just going to read them out, because this, for Leicester fans, there's some, I mean, almost every name in there is a name that most fans of a certain age will recognise, with Kevin Poole, Simon Grayson, who's gone on to do a lot in the game, yourself, then Walshy, Mike Whitlow, Gary Parker, again, like you're saying, Muzzy, is it, Neil Lennon, Scott Taylor. Scott Taylor had a great touch about him as well, but I think he had a nasty injury, didn't he, Scott?
Yeah, two injuries did him, didn't he?
Yeah.
Definitely.
And I think he could have gone a lot. And then up front, yeah, like you say, Emil Heskey and Steve Claridge.
Yeah.
What a team. I mean,
it was a good team. And I remember when I came to the team, obviously, I didn't really know anyone there. I think the only player I'd ever sort of come across in my career was Colin Hill, and he wasn't figuring in the team at the time. And probably partly down to do with myself. But we really, as a back four, me and myself and Steve Walsh, we forged a really, really good partnership where I'm not saying either was fantastic, but as a two, we were very difficult to beat. We bounced off each other really well. We read the game really well. And then either side of us, Simon and Mickey Witts. And again, we, as a back four, I just thought we really developed a good spine for the, or a backbone for the team. And then we had Pooley behind us, and anything that ever got through, he was incredible. We used to call him the cat. He was absolutely incredible. His reflexes were second to none. And it's just a shame of his, you know, his height was one of the reasons that, it you know, was. We brought Casey in. And that was another tough day for Pooley, to be honest, away at Sunderland.
Considering his size, Kevin Poole, he made some outstanding saves. You would have never thought he'd have made a keeper. He was just so agile for his size. It was untrue. He did save us a lot of times. And unlucky that he had other keepers. I mean, Gavin Ward had him out for a time. I think Carl Muggleton had him out. No, Carl Muggleton was before. But he couldn't get that consistent run of games, could he? Because then they kept bringing another keeper in because of his size. But whenever he came in, he was brilliant.
He was. Super.
Couldn't blame him at all for anything.
No, one of the best I've played with, to be honest.
Yeah, absolutely. Joanna says, how tough was it playing against Di Canio when we played West Ham? Always remember him completely overtaking the game. He was class, even as a City fan.
I've played against West Ham for Leicester a couple of times. I don't remember if he played because I'm trying to think who they would have had up front at the time. It's something I'd have to check the team, but it's such a long time ago. I remember going down there and we lost 1-0, and he possibly did play, but it was a funny one. So as a centre-half, you didn't come across him that much because he was always dropping in deep. It was before we had what we'd call a classic number 10 now. But he was obviously from his background. That's where, you know, you'd find him. So it was more a problem for the midfield than ourselves. But, you know, you talk about for us, like I mentioned before, your Bergkamps, your Cantonars would come and play up against you, your Mark Hughes. They were the sort of more difficult ones.
I don't know if Stuart's winding us up or if it's a true story, but he says, was it right that Kevin Poole dropped Player of the Year trophy once?
he may have done, but I doubt it very much. He didn't drop anything. Absolutely. He was just absolutely frightening. He was, you know, like I say, through that run that we had, through that period, he was fantastic. And then in the final, he just topped it off with another, you know, match-winning performance for us on another day. Could have gone another way, and we might not have had the great day that we had.
Yeah, Julian, you played for a number of teams, didn't you? Obviously, you know, being polite, some would say journeyman, but you did play for a few.
Yeah, I did. I did. Had boots, will travel was my motto when during my heyday.
There was one that was quite interesting. I thought Leicester. I think it was about a year later. Leicester sent you out on loan to Crewe. Mm. Was it Crewe?
Then
all of a sudden, we were playing in the Cup Winners' Cup, and you got called back the day before, and you got threw into the starting lineup for the Atletico Madrid game at home, didn't you?
I did. It was a funny one, that, and it wasn't. I didn't get called back. You were in a loan at the time. I don't know if it stands now. The first month you have to go, and they can't call you back. But I just happened to finish my month. The lads had gone away and done ever so well. And the fact that Ian Marshall had caused such a problem for them in the away leg was part of the gaffer's reasoning. And I know I was in the squad, didn't really expect to be involved, you know, maybe not even on the bench. But then I remember Steve Walford speaking to Kit, man, I've forgotten his name now, and he's still there. I spoke to him the other week.
Paul.
And he was asking if he'd got my shirt, and he hadn't. He'd left it at the training ground because he wasn't expecting me to play either. And he had to do a mad dash through the traffic and go to the training ground and get my shirt. So didn't really have time to think about it. Didn't really have time to get nervous, and just got thrown in. And a night that I think, you know, we all know the moment that has probably decided. I thought we were on top at the time, and I thought we'd go on and win the game, if I'm honest.
Again,
as Martin O'Neill says, the French referees was fudged. Absolutely fudged. Yeah. Four penalties we should have had that night. Four.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Again, that's another very, very famous game in Leicester City's history, Julian, that lots of, again, I remember I believe it was still standing in the cop behind the goal there. There was so much, I think, foggy smoke that night from the flares. It was a trip, and there was balloons galore. It was back in the day when pre-match there was balloons everywhere and ticker tape. It was a fantastic atmosphere down at Filbert Street. What were some of your brief memories of Filbert Street then?
In particular, in that match, it was quite weird. I think the lad who played up front, he didn't call for the ball. He whistled, and I was sort of looking at him quite bemused, thinking this is not normal in England, but feel yeah. free. So he's like, had a really sharp whistle. For me, I thought, you know, it was a massive game, and I never like to think that I ever got overawed by opponents, but I remember being quite wary that night. Obviously, what a team they are now, were then. But again, like I felt with everything, I think I played myself into the game. We did as a team. And like I say, I felt we were stronger. And when the ref sends Gary Parker off for taking a free kick too quickly, I mean, you just can't write it, can you? It's just such a bitter way to lose a game.
It was fudged.
Such a big
fudged.
Game as well. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So
I've got a completely different question here, but it's a bit time appropriate. Chris Hand says, if you had to isolate with one player you played with, who would it be? I quite like that one. And again, it doesn't have to be a Leicester player. It could be anybody. But was there somebody you particularly got on well with in the game?
Somebody who
keep you amused?
Well, I'd say this is someone that players won't remember or fans won't remember. I was a young lad at Rotherham, my first club. And there was a Scottish fullback called Billy Russell. And I was a bit new to staying away in a hotel with players and all that. And he was a really good bloke. And he just started reeling off story after story after story that was so hilarious that you can imagine. So this would have been 1990. He was near the end of his career. Then he was telling me stories that happened through the 80s that involved football, alcohol and females. And they were hilarious. And I can't remember many nights in my life on nights out myself, sat in this room listening to these stories, absolutely crying all night. And it's a long time memory, but it's always stuck with me. And it's probably sort of took some of my nerves away. It was one of my first trips away, I think. So I think they probably roomed me with him on purpose, not for the hilarity, but just because he was an experienced pro. But stuck with me that memory all this time.
Two more questions, if that's all right, Julian.
Yeah, absolutely fine.
Bazza says, what was your highest moment and lowest moment in football?
Interestingly, both at Leicester and probably within a year. So obviously the playoff final, I mean, I just arrived, like I say, bad debut. But the team really, as I said earlier, we really like bonded together well, went on the run. You know, even the playoff semi-finals were really tense affairs. Unbelievable away at Stoke. What a night that was when, you know, all their fans jumped on the pitch at the end and the police had to separate us. We ended up at the away end. I don't know if anybody who's listening tonight remembers that. Neil Lennon came back with no kit on and we were all sort of stuck down the bottom end of the pitch. But then obviously that led to the playoff final and that massive highlight for myself. I'd just come from Sheffield Wednesday, been in and out of the team all season, you know, dropped down as it was into the Championship and immediately got promoted straight back up. And so that felt like a real highlight. And then obviously, you know, further on in the season in the Premier League, we're staying up. Signing of Matty Elliott, who I get on great with still, and we enjoyed playing together. But the unfortunate thing for myself at the time, it was him or me, and he was Martin's choice, which is, you know, fair enough. And what a great, you know, player and captain he was for the club. But because of that, obviously my games were limited that season. But I played in every round of the League Cup. But unfortunately, we've got Middlesbrough in the final. And we played Middlesbrough at home, and I think they beat us 3-0. And on that day, Janino absolutely ran riot and
murdered us.
Yeah, absolutely murdered us. Ran the show, and it was a 3-0 convincing win. We get them in the final, and the gaffer's first thoughts were, "How do I stop that?" And his obviously answer to that, which worked well. So you can't fault the gaffer, is to put Pontus Carmark in there, yeah. One of the best defenders in the league, and particularly man marking. He had a really weird thing, Pontus, when he was jocking you, he would look in your eyes as well as looking at the ball, which no other defender has ever been coached to do apart from the Swedish World Cup squad. And he was looking at the movement of your body and he could see which way your body shape was and which way you were going. And it made him exceptional at what he did. And it totally worked. He really nullified that aspect of their attack. But then we went from a back three to a back four to accommodate that. I was the spare man in the back three. And I think, you know, the gaffer felt, you know, Spencer, there's obviously Walshy was Walshy, and Spencer was very quick, quicker than myself. And that's the combination he went for. But, you know, I didn't find out I had an inkling, to be fair, because I'm not daft, but we didn't name the team or know the team. It was named like an hour and 10 minutes before kickoff in the changing rooms. And it was a very somber moment for myself and Jamie Lawrence.
Yeah.
And we quickly went up to the players' lounge, and I think we had about 6 pints of Guinness within about an hour. And if you notice, because the players' lounge right at the other end of the ground, if you notice, everyone watches the video as they're doing the national anthems. Me and Jamie have walked back all the way back round, back out of the tunnel, we're probably half cut, and we're actually stood behind the goal because we didn't get back to the bench in time. But all I will say is that we were both so disappointed. It was a tough one to take, and having bad times, you've had bad performances, bad results. I've got relegated. But that was a real tough one. I would have obviously loved to have been involved in that. And then obviously the replay at Hillsborough, which is where I just come from. So that would have been doubly right. But tough to take, but it's football. My best sort of times were at Leicester. So you've got to take the rough with the smooth.
Absolutely. Just a brief one. Chappers asks, just keep it brief, but what do you reckon to VAR, Julian? Are you glad it... Is it good?
It can be.
Is it just
be,
not right?
It's not right. I think there's a lot of people been saying it, and they're doing it abroad. They do it in the Bundesliga. For me, the referee on the pitch is the man in charge of the game. So why he can't go to the camera and have a look at the replay, however many times he wants to, and then see if he feels he's made the right decision. And then he's the man who's to be stood up and counted at the end. So if he thinks he's made the right decision and we all think it's wrong afterwards, that's something for him to live with an answer to. But he should be the man. He's the man in charge on the pitch. How we can sort of subcontract that decision out to someone in a studio, I really, really don't know. Not as qualified. They're not seeing the pace of the game for what it is because they're not stood on the pitch. The ref's seen a decision. He makes the call. Yeah, so the call for the VAR. Go and back your call up. Go and back your, and then, or if not, be the big man and say, I made a bit of a mistake. But things happen so fast and, the way people are diving these days and how clever they are with it and how quick the game is, so difficult for referees, because that's something else I would get onto with VAR. I would go back and find players and ban them for cheating. Because it can be stamped out if we want to stamp it out. I just don't think they want to stamp it out enough because it would cause a bit too much hassle with your bigger clubs and your stars.
Jamie, have you got any final questions for Julian?
Well, there is one. You were at Chef Wednesday before you came to Leicester. Did you ever play with our old manager, Nigel Pearson? Was there a time you were there together?
I made my debut with him. Nigel, he was really, I was lucky at the time. There was Nigel Pearson, I mean, lucky and unlucky. I was brought up in the right environment. Nigel Pearson, Peter Shirliffe, and then Viv Anderson, who was fantastic to me as a mentor, what you like. But Pearson was exactly the same. I made my debut for Wednesday in the UEFA, the same as the Madrid game against Spora Luxembourg, because we beat them, I think, 8-0 at home. So I played alongside him there, and I played alongside him in other games. Cracking captain. We had a great trip to South Africa once, which was mid-season. I don't know why we went there mid-season for 6 days. It probably wasn't ideal as preparation, but deaf things we did like that at the time. Spent a lot of time. He was rooming with Nigel Jemson. I was rooming with Chris Waddle. We spent a lot of time together, obviously, having a couple of beers and what have you. But he's a really funny bloke, really genuine guy. And I sort of felt for him that after he left and then the team went on and won the league. I mean, the team that he left was the form team of the Premier League in the last 10 or 15 games of that season. And I'm not sure if anyone outside, maybe Leicester City fans, would give him that recognition. I know it's been mentioned, but it's never been fanfared that he really put something together there.
It was definitely his team.
Yeah. Yeah, and Claudio came in and did great, and he would have done things a little bit differently. That's fine, but I think for me, Nigel deserves a massive amount of credit for what he did.
I think, Julian, most Leicester fans would say if Nigel Pearson hadn't done what he'd done, we wouldn't have won the league, and if Claudio hadn't done what he'd done, i.e., if Nigel had stayed, we probably wouldn't have won the league. There was something where Nigel built it, and Claudio just got it over the line. It was almost like, I think Leicester fans do give credit.
Yeah. It's like the greatest handover of all time, isn't it? Because, managers go out not doing well, but he's not, and he's handed it over, and Claudio's made it a little bit better, and what a fantastic season it was for the club.
Julian, I guess a final question, because we've got to let you go. What are you up to nowadays? What's life like after football? Am I right in saying it's something to do with mortgages?
It is, yeah. It's been difficult. I've done quite a few things, if I'm honest with you, but I qualified a few years ago, which was a strange one. I was the oldest one in the classroom, apart from the tutor, but I did my CMAPs, and I'm now a mortgage and protection advisor working for a firm. We do all investments and... and all that other pensions and stuff like that. So,
Do you still get a chance to watch much football alive?
I do. I dabbled with non-league, but very, very low down. I'm talking if Premier League's one, I'm talking like step 10, a little bit of money involved. Really enjoyed it. Did well in spells, and I was hoping that if I could just get up a couple of leagues, that it might become something. Never quite did. So. Probably, too late for me now, if I'm honest. I'd probably rather go and watch local non-league. I live not far from Worksop Town because I find it more honest and I can stand at the side of the pitch with my beer in my plastic cup and things like that. I mean, my lad plays for Worksop Town. He's 12 years old, so a lot of the dads go and it's nice, good social day out. So obviously I've got Sky and I watch that. And funny enough, of all the clubs I played for, I'm a Sheffield lad, but I do feel that affinity more to Leicester than I do most clubs, if I'm honest there. And what I feel about the side that won the Premier League and our side is it was nice to be at the club at a good period in its history.
Yeah.
I felt like I was there at that good time. And I think that's why it's got a bit of a good good factor to me. Still in touch with Muzzy and Matty Elliott and Stevie Walsh and one or two others and going to pop down for a beer with them all at the end of the season. But just to be at the club at the time that I was there. Yeah, I know, yeah. But just to be at the club at the time that I was there, just it feels nice. And I was involved in the veterans until I had an operation that I can't play anymore a few months ago. But it's like you still felt a bit involved with it. And then they went and did what they did in 16. And you just think, that's us all over again, but obviously, 100 times better. But you can see that the club, though. The buzz around the club at the moment and, everything that's happened in the last few years. Yeah, but I know for us, it was the first trophy for a while and we maintained the Premier League status as Martin was there. And I know that was a great achievement. But like I say, just those nice periods and to be involved in that was fantastic.
Brilliant. All right. Julian, I'm going to say that has been amazing. Thank you so much for coming on tonight. I know we could talk for another hour with you. So hopefully,
absolutely.
I mean, I know you've
got nothing. I haven't spoke much tonight.
I know. And I know, Julian, you've got nothing better to do. So if you've still got nothing better to do in a few weeks' time, perhaps you'll come back on again.
Yeah, drop me a line, boys, anytime. Really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thanks again from all the
fans.
Cheers,
Julian. Thank you. Loads
of great comments.
Cheers, thanks.
Cheers, Julian.
Cheers.
So, well, Jamie, well done for organising that.
Cracking interview that was. A bit of old school football. What more do you want on a Monday night when there's nothing else to talk about?
Well, yeah.
Old school football.
Ex-Leicester players who've got nothing better to do in their life. We'll go for some more, maybe.
I mean, old school, that's right up your mind street, isn't it? That's perfect for us too.
I can just about remember those days, Jamie.
Oh! That's
listen,
not nice.
Thanks very much, Jamie, for sorting that out for us.
You're welcome. Not a problem.
We'll see you next Sunday. And you get finding us another player for next week.
I'm doing sort of a quiz on Sunday. So everyone come and watch me quiz.
It's a quiz.
Only a quick quiz.
Foxy's Arms pub quiz. Sunday morning.
Foxy's Arms pub quiz. That's perfect time for it this week.
I actually think you should do that on a Friday night live so we can all grab a beer and do it with you. But there you go. I'm putting you on the spot with that.
We could do. We could have one in Sunday morning, couldn't you?
What, state still on the pop on a Sunday morning? Some fans would be like that.
There'd be a few. I think we know a couple like that as well.
Well, yes. Joanna says, brilliant, more Leicester legends, please. We'll certainly
I'm trying.
Sort that out. Simon says, great stuff. I shouldn't put those words on there from Scooby Baz, but thanks for that.
Yeah, but it's a compliment, though, isn't it? It's a compliment.
And I just want to say as well, can we say a big hello? I don't know if Alan Youngie is still watching, but...
He wasn't he?
I did see Youngie was watching, and I hope Youngie's doing well. I know, obviously, we used to do stuff with Youngie before he was ill, and just best wishes to you, Youngie, if you're still watching.
Try and get him on if he's well enough. Imagine the stories about him and Lineker in the bath.
If Youngie, if you're feeling well enough to come on alive, you come on, because we'd love to get you on. Okay. LCFC Holland is saying, I've seen about this Wednesday. Jamie has an announcement.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Yeah. on Wednesday morning. It's not an April Fool. Come and join me on the Foxy's Arms, Alcudia, at 9 o'clock your time. So 10 o'clock Spanish time, 9 o'clock UK time, on the Foxy's Arms Alcudia page on Facebook.
Fantastic. We'll get that on there, and obviously we'll share that. Chappers says we didn't do. Oh, Mr. Chappers is so good on his socials. Chappers, let us know what they are. We're too old. We forget to do things like that.
He's the young pup.
Paul says you're doing a great job. Thanks for that, Paul. We're just trying to keep you entertained. Chris Ward, again, thanks for those compliments. And I think we'll leave the last comment here to Maz, who says, stay safe, everybody. We'll leave it there. Thanks, Jamie, for joining us from the Fox's Arms all the
way
out.
Great. Stay safe. Stay indoors. Be good, everyone.
Brilliant. Thanks, Jamie. We'll catch up with you soon and get thinking about the next player. And
I'm trying.
And Friday night is pub quiz night with a beer. All right. I'll speak to you soon.
See you later, all. Cheers, good on you, Foxes.
So that was Jamie from the Fox's Arms. That was Julian Watts, ex-Leicester player in a Legends team, I'm going to say. That team he played in was absolutely full of Leicester City legends on there. Adam says, get Gary Lineker on here. Well, that would be nice. What's the chances of that? We never know. Scooby Baz, thank you for that. And Alex Green. Youngie, here he is. He is still watching. Yes, Youngie, we'll get you on. If you're well enough, Alan, and I hope you are doing well, please come on and have a chat with us. I'll ping you a message and see if we can get the legend that is Alan Young. We'll all remember Youngie from his playing days, from his BBC Radio Leicester commentary days, the Allez le Bleu, famous recent Leicester City history. So, Youngie, it'd be great to get you on, pal. Hope so. Thanks, everybody who's been watching. As ever, thanks to all the sponsors who, in these tough times, go and support them as best you can. Keep it local. Keep following the pals at Emergency Glazing Vehicles, Pink, Tiger Beer, ADT Peters Pizzas, the Fox's Arms, Hologram Harlow, Geek Life, and of course our pals at Bodie Hodges, which is the charity we support. My name is Phil. This is Leicester Fan Zone Show. Without you guys, we would be nothing. See you soon.